If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
But I absolutely remember thinking that if you came to me and said, I've just barrel rolled it down the A303, as long as I thought you were doing something interesting or discovering the breadth of ability of the car, I'd happily phone up the car maker and say, look, it's upside down, it's wrecked. I know it's a Ferrari, but such is life.
You know, when Roger Moore did that, I mean, it's hard to believe now, that was filmed as a TV show in pokey little Britain when he was James Bond.
In 10 years' time, they are going to be the icon cars. They're going to be peak ICE cars.
Hello, and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast. If we all look a bit bleary-eyed, it's because it's a very, very early record, and that's why Neil Clifford is sitting in a car in London. If you can guess what the car is, including the swept capacity of the engine and the colour of the exterior, you get a jelly bean. Well done. The first topic for today is something quite important. It is what we've decided to call car OCD. Most of us probably suffer from it in some form. Especially, I would say, Ed would love it. What's your car OCD? How does it work? And don't worry about Neil Clifford, whose finger we can see on the screen.
I'm going to answer for two people, myself, and I feel I need to answer for Rohan as well, who probably has the same level of OCD as Chris Cooper. But mine are silly ones, I think, and things like shiny steering wheels. I don't like a shiny leather steering wheel. That's sort of
That's not silly.
Steering wheel or mung. I think we referred to mung back in episode number one when we were talking about an E63 you used to own. Dusty dashboards as well. I struggle with the dusty dashboards. Straight dials, cheese and onion crisps. That's kind of, I've told you about that one before, but that does feel like an OCD problem. Straight steering wheel when parked. Steering wheel has to be straight. Can't be on the piss.
I'm loving these.
Yeah. And then, but I thought I was trying to come up with them, and I was on the plane to Stockholm the other day. And then I thought I would ask Rohan. 2 hours later, when we landed, he just about finished his list.
But by the way, Rohan is the man without whom collecting cars probably wouldn't function. So yeah. Shout out to Rohan.
He does all the work.
Here's a few of Rohan's. Temperature numbers need to be on even for the heat in the car. Rolls-Royce centre cap's not straight. Not that he has a Rolls-Royce. The side bolster in a fixed 918 seat, when it starts to get slightly creased, he clearly wouldn't be able to own a car like that. So that would have to be solved.
I like Rohan more and more.
Any tools missing from a tool set in there, that's a big problem for him. Number plates not straight. Carpets worn under the heel, I'm guessing under the throttle heel. That immediately the car has to be sold and replaced with a brand new one. The carpet's not in position. Obviously, some manufacturers have their securing mechanisms on the corner of the carpets. So when they stop working, that's a big problem. So car, again, has to be sold immediately and replaced with a new one. The list goes on.
I'm speechless.
I feel so much better.
Now realizing I'm quite different to you guys. So, Chris Cooper, you're aching to add to this list.
I love that.
yesterday, Lynn said to me, she said, what are you talking about tomorrow? And I said, well, we're going to talk about OCD, obsessive compulsive behavior. And she said, that's not what the D stands for. I said, it is. I said, it is. It's a behavior. It's a feature. She said, are you going to tell them? Like she said, you're broken. You're a flawed human being. You've got to tell them.
So we know after the Leaf incident.
I clean cars. Clean. It's a fact. It's a scientific fact. Clean cars are physically nicer to drive.
Yes.
The end.
Correct.
Yes.
They are nicer to drive. In fact, I'm so obsessive about it. Once I've got, because we quite like silvery, lighter coloured wheels, but they do show brake dust a bit more. So I'm so obsessive about it. I don't really brake if I can when I'm on the road. I sort of like to just, you know, coast a bit. I think it's good practice. You sort of watch the traffic ahead thinking, I don't like to brake. And this says to me, you drive very fast, which I find very flattering. I'm very pleased with this. I said, yes, but look at the wheels on my cars. They're not covered in brake dust.
Sorry, about clean cars. You live down the end of a muddy lane on a farm.
Yes, so when we get, like this. In fact, actually, Neil and I share the same person who cleans our cars.
The Charlie.
Lovely Charlie.
Oh, once again, it's the podcast of the people.
And once the car is clean.
Just clean, Chris, don't you just clean your own car? And poor Charlie has nothing
I'm not
to
very
do.
Good. Well, I clean it after. I clean it after.
I know you do. You can
I clean it after because there's little bits of water in the shut lines, or a little bit of water has dribbled out of the wing mirror, the door mirror. And I've got a little bit of, you know, like sort of magic sort of polisher thing, you spray onto it and over. Once it's clean, I don't really like to use them because it might get dirty. So the clean car thing, I think, is a bit rattles in cars. I can't stand a rattle. If we're going on holiday, I have to pack the boot. I have to pack the boot because there might be some coat hangers which have been stacked in the boot and the metal bit of the hanger, they're together. You can't do that. You've got to have a little sort of insulating layer of something absorbent between the metal bits hangers. Otherwise, you're going to get an old bang, rattly noises. You can't have that. You can't have rattly noises in the car. It's official.
I thought yours were going to be more about sort of temperatures and dials and stuff.
Don't get him started.
I have 7 years of this going to the
climate control.
Unbelievable.
I used to travel a lot back towards the airport with, I guess it's Alison Lee now. And you get in the morning and I couldn't help myself. You look, you say, where are you going? He said, doesn't matter where I'm going. I need to see your dashboard. Have you got the climate control button pressed? Rather than juggling the temperature. No. Just press, set the temperature and press the button. That's it. And on the different side, he would have 17 degrees on one side and 23 on the other. You can't do that.
You can't the car do won't that. Drive straight if those numbers...
It won't drive straight. It drives along like this.
Oh, Neil, have you ever been inside one of Chris Harris's cars?
Oh, he has. I used to get told off. I had to turn up with a clean car. Also, he totally takes over. If he's the passenger in the front seat, then if you're the driver, you have jurisdiction over nothing. I mean, literally nothing. Everything can be changed.
You can set the throttle position. I'm very happy you should do that because you're quite good at it.
He'll grab the wheel, the lot.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Neil Clifford, tell us what your car OCD is.
Well, Chris, unfortunately, slightly stole my point because mine is about symmetry.
Yes,
because I do not like those cars, which all modern cars have them now, that have dual temperature because I cannot handle the temperature, even being 1% or 1 degree different on left and right. And obviously, men like being cold and women like being warm. And it really is quite annoying when the wife goes straight up to 25 and I'm at 19.
Oh, I have
and I have to, I then have to compromise at 21, ideally 20, but if it goes to 21, it's just about okay. If I put the window down, I have to put the passenger window down
totally
at the equal level. You can't have one window open.
No.
You have to have both windows open.
Yeah.
And obviously parking, and I'm sure we're going to talk about parking a little bit today. Straight steering wheel, vital, and obviously straight wheel, which is obviously connected to the steering wheel, one hopes.
Who doesn't know that?
Completely
Who
straight.
Who doesn't know that?
You know, if there are the air vents, you cannot have air vents at a different angle. They all have to be straight.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's pointless using that car. You may as well get a taxi if they're
43 episodes building a loyal audience, and we're shipping them at such a rate at the moment because they've just realised that you lot are a bunch of absolute weirdos.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Manish, just help me. Bloody help me now.
Now, I've only owned one car, and I reckon it would pass the three tests, the four tests, with flying colours.
Oh,
another
Jesus.
One. Which is like, if I go on any journey with the car that involves going out of London, I have to have the car washed and cleaned.
I'm going to get another inside drink. I can't deal out. With it.
Has to be clean. You cannot drive a dirty car for more than 30 minutes. And by dirty, I mean, it needs to be cleaned. My car gets cleaned every 2 weeks anyway. But even if I've used it 10 days ago, if I'm going to Oxford or something, the car is cleaned. I completely agree. I completely agree with symmetry. And
symmetry.
The worst thing about climate control, you get in some people's cars, they actually have quad climate control, don't they? The two people in the back can be in a sauna.
That's the kind of car that Edward grew up in.
Exactly, with a
one
lighter.
With a cigarette lighter in the back.
With a lighter, with a lighter. So there's, I think there is a TV ad. I mean, there's a little ad which sums up using a dishwasher, our OCB. I think you're right. We should call it OCB. What it is it's a man filling a dishwasher. I don't know if you've seen it. It's fantastic. He has a set square. He's got tape measure, all the forks go in. He just gets literally puts all the plates in properly, you know, puts the soap in. His wife comes in and starts just chucking various items at the dishwasher. They land randomly. Now, there's some argument that the outcome's the same. It is not the same. It is not the same. Unique.
Yeah, but Chris Cooper's hand washed everything twice before he's put it in the bloody.
I do wash it before
exactly.
It goes in.
Oh, my God.
It before it goes in.
Of course you've got, you can't put dirty dishes into a dishwasher.
Yeah.
That's not the point of a dishwasher.
Yeah.
I don't know where to
and
go.
You can't
with
have it, any food in a car that smells, okay? Actually, I just have no Christmas.
Yeah, that's
true. You're allowed sucking sweets, you're allowed a chocolate, and you can have water. And nothing that smells.
Yeah, non-staining waxy sweets. Yeah, wine gums are borderline.
We can have a smell test next week in the podcast.
Do you know every time I look at one of these 4, 5, 6 M's in, you know, and I'm doing it sort of obsessively 5 times a day at the moment, I'm constantly looking at the seats to see where the creases in the leather are to really work out how.
Prepare to be disappointed in a 4, 5, 6. You ain't finding a mint seat in a 4, 5, 6 that's 20 years old. No. 30
Sounds
years
like
old.
He needs a new old stock one.
I've just realised, chaps, as much as I love you dearly, if this was a dating app, we're not compatible. We really are not.
We're swiping right.
I am a different species to you guys. I don't have any car OCD. And if I did have, I don't think I could have functioned professionally, particularly the last 8 years of my life. Some of the stuff I've had to drive on that telly show, you get there and they say, this is your thing. We paid it £3,000 for it. And you get into it. There was one we had in Northumberland. It was like a Honda Civic or something. And it was, I think it was £1,800. And there was mould on the dashboard. There was, you know when a steering wheel's gone mouldy because it can't, no one had cleaned that off. So I just had mould on my hands, which I then put in my mouth straight away. there's just disgusting. So I have no OCD about any control. I don't care what a steering wheel looks like. I don't like a muggy Alcantara much. I can do without
it. You're quite good on that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I might get some emery paper, but otherwise I can live with it, especially if it's my mum. I don't care about anything. The only driving thing I've got, which is a bit like saying a magpie, No, Clifford, stop doing that. It's terribly confusing because you're going upside
down. Sorry, darling.
I know, but you're so good at that now. Is it when I'm going through a light that's changing from amber to red, I look in the mirror to see whether I see the red. And if I see the red, I say a magic word to stop bad things happening to me.
I like that.
I'm not OCD. I'm definitely mad, but I'm not OCD.
What's the magic word, Chris?
It won't be magic.
I'm never sharing that with anyone.
It won't be magic.
My similar one to that, Chris, is you obviously we talked about these motorway stretches we go down, and they're on certain motorway stretches. It used to be the police cars would sit in their little spots to get you with their gun, but now most of the time they are highway maintenance vans. But the police cars do sometimes sit on the entry lanes on certain junctions, and the Porsche junction at Reading, what is that, 14 or something like that, coming back 15. Into London. Towards London.
Yeah. You look up the...
I do, but obviously coming towards it, I have to decide, do I back off a bit to make sure they don't get me if they are there? But if I do go past and I'm sort of not sure if I'm quite on the right side of the law, I have to check back up the slip road to see if there's a police car there.
Yes, just to see.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Just one final thing on OCD. I went to Luxembourg 10 years ago or something like that to meet someone. And when I got in the taxi one morning to go to the airport, I can't remember what car I was in, but the driver at the traffic lights got a paintbrush, and he was swiping through the vents with his paintbrush.
Oh, just I've got one of those.
Just to sort the dust as he was driving. Very good.
I've experimented with different stiffness of bristles. There's in Hemel, in Apsley, there's actually a factory that makes paintbrushes. It's a traditional English paintbrush manufacturer. And on their website, they have explanations for the stiffness of bristles. You need something that's sort of the soft side of medium, just to get into all the little corners and not scratch it. Otherwise, the stiffer bristles scratch a bit.
Oh, yeah, you don't want that.
Chris, without being too arch or disrespectful, why is it you care so much about the clean coachwork of a road car, and yet you're happy to whack the shit out of the coachwork of a racing car?
It's because I'm better at the former than the latter.
It's
the only honest answer I can give. It pains me. I mean, I've got photographs of various dented racing cars, what I have done in Germany. And I don't like parking scrapes. We'll get onto some parking at some point, but I hate curb wheels. I hate curb wheels.
Oh, you can't drive a car with a curb wheel.
I can't. You think I've curbed it. I can just about get it home, but then I can never see it until it's all fixed and it's replaced and done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Deary me. I mean, you're not going to believe this, chaps. The next subject is Chris Cooper tells us how not to curb a wheel. No word of a lie. The most beautiful segue, it means it's another topic on which I have very little to say. Chris Cooper, away you go.
So, it only really works if you park driver's side to the curb. We had this, it was a little thing we had last week where one of the very kind chaps who went to the track day in September invited us to breakfast.
So you park in the most inconvenient fashion on a UK road?
If it's a one-way street, sometimes you can park, but Highway Code probably says you have to park in the direction of travel, but nobody does. So you can only do it.
Does Highway Code really say that?
Probably, yeah. I think it does. Yeah. So you have to open the driver's door. It's parallel parking. You have to reverse in. You have to open the driver's door. So, Neil, you can do it. Open the driver's door.
There you go.
Look down to the back. Look out and back. That's it. And if you imagine reversing, turn the car into the curb, and you can really see when I think the rear wheel is near the curb. There'll be a little angle left of the car out from the curb, and the rear wheel's by the curb. Then turn the wheel all the way, full lock. because the first thing that touches the curb is the rubber of the tire.
Ah.
Not the body, not the rim. It's the rubber of the wheel. It's a, and it's a nice little squidgy. And then once you hit that, you then turn the wheel, do a little bit of jogging just to make sure it's totally parallel. Anything less than totally parallel won't work.
There we
go. Leave the wheel straight, lock the car, and enjoy your day.
I don't think you'd pass your driving test with that. I don't think they'd want you to have touched the curb.
Well, pass your driving test or have curbed free wheels. Reverse in, look out the driver's door, look at it, see it, think, yeah, I'm right. Because there's nothing worse than parallel parking and opening the door thinking, oh, there's a gap. That gap's just too big. We all know how big is too big. A nice little, very, very tight gap. So you're not obstructing other cars, not running the risk of your car being driven into. Back it in, open the driver's door, have a look, full lock, let the rubber of the tyre. You can do it in car parks when there's a wall. You want to park right against the car park in a wall on the passenger side, full lock, nose the car in. Everyone's going, no, 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 you're going to hit the car. I won't, because the front wheel is protruding from the bodywork, which is another reason why when you park the car, you must leave the wheels parallel. Otherwise, if the wheels are out, suddenly you've made your car half a metre wider and someone's going to drive into it. And you'll see them on TikTok with the car on the roof because they hit somebody's parked car with the wheel out.
Have you ever, Chris Cooper, stopped and discussed someone's bad parking with them?
Yes.
To help them?
Yes, I have. I've done it at Heathrow quite a lot with when the taxi driver come to meet me. And he's driven in, he's parked, I mean, all car parks are too small these days because they were designed for Ford Anglias rather than Ford F-150s. So quite often the driver will have driven into the parking space forward. You never do that. You never do that. And
never,
he's in an angle. So he can't see, how do I get out? More than once I've had to say, don't worry, just pop out and I'll do it for you. Everybody's
never
happy.
Never park going forward.
Have you ever been in a car with someone who doesn't care if they curb wheels or not?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen that, and I'm not sure I could be friends with someone that treats a car in such way. It's almost like a parking sense when they hear they're grinding up against the curb.
My sister uses the cars in front and behind to go bing, 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 bing.
Did she live in Paris or Rome? Paris, in London.
Well, she's just happy to do it in London. It absolutely freaks the fuck out of me. I hate it.
If she had a Bugatti...
Just put the bumpers on there, it's thought less than 5 miles an hour. I haven't scuffed anything.
But if she saw a car in front of her that even she recognises being very valuable, would you still hit it?
Which she would have to recognize it as being very valuable.
Which
first.
She wouldn't.
It could be a Countach. It could be a Bentley. She wouldn't have a clue. She would not have a clue. Okay? Unless it was a Porsche.
I saw that happen in London, I'd have a problem. But in watching in Paris is quite bizarre.
Well, we've cancelled Christmas. We've just cancelled Christmas. I've relived that now.
I was in a smart car in Paris once, collecting some sushi with the wife of a customer of mine. And we nipped around the block to get some. And she stopped outside their apartment. And I was like, that's not a space. And she was like, it is. And she proceeded to, I told you.
I think the wheel curbing thing is, for me, it always was the ultimate sin at work. When I had to sort of run, for want of a better word, the fleet of cars at Autocar, you know, who went home in what and what test cars were in. I was so disorganized, I had no idea. There was a sort of form you filled out, but it was all a bit random. But I absolutely remember thinking that if you came to me and said, I've just barrel rolled it down the A303, as long as I thought you were doing something interesting or discovering the breadth of ability of the car, I'd happily phone up the car maker and say, look, it's upside down, it's wrecked. I know it's a Ferrari, but such is life. But I would not phone a car maker and go, they nipped into Teddington and they curbed a wheel. There's something about it I just couldn't handle. I really hated it. And I still do.
It's irresponsible.
It's not caring is what it is. It's really
entirely avoidable, unless there's a curbstone protruding. And I always say to people that borrow my cars, when it comes to parking, just slow down. Take it slowly. There's no rush. If you slow down, you will achieve what you want to achieve. Yeah. Just take it slowly. Have a look around. Get out and have a look. I don't care. You might get beeped at. It's better being beeped at than curbing a wheel.
Words to live by. Words to live by.
I think I'm fortunate that I grew up with a father that when he very rarely curbed a wheel, it would be a very silent journey and probably a silent day.
I tried working in the media. Some of the people I worked with would have brand new Range Rovers, and they would, you know, when someone grimaces when they've curbed a wheel, they go, "Ugh."
Yeah.
But these people don't even grimace. They just,
that was my point. I've met that person.
Wipe a wheel out and they'll be going, I know. I mean, the grade on that film was beautiful, wasn't it? You're like, no. You have just smashed the shit out of a wheel. There's no way this car drives straight now. No way. Yeah.
I mean, I do love my wife, but she doesn't really mind that much a curbed wheel. It's fair to say.
What about a speed? What about a polished split rim speed line on a 993 RS? What would that do then, Neil? If that came back with a chunk out of it,
I don't think she would be driving such a car.
You say that with total authority.
There are certain rules.
If I was to break down the disciplines of driving, I'm not very good at many of them, but the one I'm worst at is parking. Me and parking never really get on. It never seems to work out. You know, when I often come back to a car park and think, that's not very good, Chris. You know, it's asymmetrical. It's everything that Chris Cooper wouldn't handle. And I think it's partly because I don't care. And not to the point where I'm antisocial, but it's also partly that I'm just not very good at it. Spatially, I'm not very good at getting it right.
I care deeply, but I'm not good at it. So the way I get around that is I add 20 minutes to my journey, even if it's a 5-minute journey. It's just how I deal with it. You want to park properly.
Did I admit to what I did the other day outside my flat with the yellow car and the Mercedes? Did I admit to that?
No.
Right. So just to show you, what one of the joys of my job is that I was jumping in and out of cars the whole time. And if you have extended period of time with a test car that has certain functions on it that help you with life, if you then jump back into your own car and it doesn't have them, you can assume they're on there. And everyone that has a few cars or drives different cars for work has this at the same time. So I've got a Mercedes SL500 129, which I love dearly. It's not the tidiest example, but we like it. And it was outside my flat, and I had that joy of joys. I thought, there's another space. I can have both of my cars outside the flat. And there were a few people walking along. There's a school nearby, and there's some other people. One of them had spotted me and said, "Ooh, when's Top Gear coming back?" Which was a question I couldn't answer then, but I can now. And I then promptly put it in reverse, my beautiful yellow Touring in reverse, and I just drove it straight into the front of my own Mercedes. I reversed it because I waited for the beeper to come on. And there was no beep. I thought, I'm in here, and I just reversed it straight into the front of my car. And this woman just looked at me with her child as if to say, "What is wrong with you?" And the answer is quite a lot.
A lot.
I just waited for the beep, and it just didn't come.
Yeah.
That has happened to me.
If we did the OCD list that I reeled off for Rohan, if we did next week, what is wrong with you? How long would your list be?
Oh, my God.
Could we each do it for one of the other?
Can we all just do it for Chris? It's easy. Yeah.
That has just got to be the Christmas special. We can talk about
cars. Well, you could do 2 hours of it. You wouldn't even scratch the surface. Yeah. But I do. I'm not a good parker. The parking beeper was an amazing invention for me. I mean, it was transformative. I never use the lines. I don't use the predictive lines.
No, they don't work.
No,
I don't use those. But if anyone's done an HGV test, there is a lovely... The best thing about learning to drive a truck, particularly an articulated truck, is the reversing.
Yeah.
Once you learn the angles and to use the swing of the headboard, it's a really lovely thing because there are absolute rules that you can trust, that if the headboard gets to that point there and you wang all the lock on,
you will end up exactly where you want to end up.
Yeah, reversing trailers.
There's something very reassuring about that. Absolutely.
I definitely couldn't do that. It's why I don't own a caravan.
You could.
Own
a caravan? No.
Watching a good rally mechanic spin a car trailer around, it just is a joy.
That is where, more often than not, I've had to say to somebody, just jump out, I'll do it for you, reversing a trailer. I grew up working on a farm. I now live on a farm. And if you can't reverse a trailer on a farm, sell the farm. And usually with boats and little dinghies and stuff, there's a very, very clever, in fact, he probably worked with Clever Jason a few years ago. Very, very clever man I know down in Cornwall. And we were towing a dinghy somewhere for our children. And we went past somewhere we want to stop at. And he said, he's back there. And I said, look, you can back it in there. Look, if you stop here, you can just back it in there and whip round. He said, no, I'll go and find a roundabout. I said, there's no roundabouts here. And I thought, you can't do it. I said, just pop out. So I just sort of, you got it. You can't. I prefer doing it looking over your shoulder. You can do it in the mirrors, but it's a bit. Did it? Went around. And he said, how did you do that? I said, well, it's reversing a trailer. It's such a lovely skill to have. I think it's wonderful. Really,
I don't have it.
It's very satisfying. Very satisfying.
Unbelievable. Right. The next topic is, here we go. Now, this just caused a little bit of, a little bit controversial, because I suggested to people we should find the biggest car bargain on sale. That's specific to the UK. If you're listening overseas, I'm sorry, we can't do it for your country. And Edward Lovett immediately said, I don't think there are any real bargains just yet. I know he feels the market's about to move, but I think there are some bargains out there. And I want to know, just name me one car that you think is a bargain and why. So we'll start, not with Edward Lovett, because I don't think he believes me at all. We'll start with Manish.
I had to get onto the old internet for this one. And my definition for this was a car that I think is basically, I look for used cars. So I wanted something that basically had very, very low mileage, looked pretty much as if you'd have bought it yesterday. It could be 10 years old, I didn't mind. And it had to be around half the price or less than when it came out new. And I really didn't want to, the reason why I didn't put a 4.56 in is because it is 20 years old.
Reasonable criteria, man. Reasonable criteria.
So I'll tell you, I thought Audi R8, the Gallardo, the 911, the 997, the MP4 12C, all sort of vaguely fitted this criteria. They were either 40 or 50% of their original price, all had 20,000 miles or less on them. But I'll tell you the car that I think is the Uber bargain. I know we've talked about things like the Scaglietti being bulletproof and all the rest of it, but for me, it was a Ferrari. Look at you, doggy. Hello. Are you giving me a quick love up? I do need that in the morning. But I think it's a Ferrari 430 Spider. You can pick those things up, really good looking ones. Oh, look at Edward's face, right? For 60 or 70,000 pounds. And the Spider is just a beautiful car. And I saw a great Nero one, immaculate red leather, 25,000 miles, 69,995. I think, how is that not a bargain? A convertible Ferrari for 11,000 pounds more than a BMW 52i. Yeah. 520i. That is a bargain.
Edward Lovett will respond to that in a minute, because he'll tell us about the potential bills. I'm going to go next. I often leave myself to last. I think the definition of this for me is when you see that one of your friends or acquaintances has bought a certain car, and you just, you don't go, oh, how much was that? You just go, what'd you give for that? You know, that sort of nice little, you're not judging their wealth.
What'd you give for that?
That sort of tradey phrase. And the car that I've done this twice to acquaintances over the last few months is a Jaguar F-Type R. I still think it's a really good-looking car. It's quirky. It's got its flaws. But I know people that buy these things for sort of early, mid-20s.
Yeah.
And they've not done moon miles. And it's a car that... It looks great to me. It sounds fantastic. It's it's got some stuff that isn't brilliant about it. But for the money, wow, what a machine.
Yeah. Great exhaust plug.
Obviously, the new TVR is the badge you give it. But I always think, and also, the other thing about good value is, or a bargain is, once you've driven away, you think, I won't look at those on Auto Trader. I won't look at those on Collected Cars. I won't look at those wherever. And that night, you're on there going, oh, look, there's a green one. There's a nice green one. It's got a nice interior. And I F-Type R for me is an awful lot of car for the money.
That is nice.
Chris Cooper.
And the F-Type boot, is it cheaper? Because people discover eventually it's literally got no boot.
Could be.
Can you get golf clubs in there? Have they done the golf club test?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Couldn't get a golf ball in it.
Yeah, okay.
If you could get a golf ball in it, it would just bloody rattle, and there's no call for that.
That's another topic. I wrote down. What's the most useless tailgate or, you know, tail lifted hatchback ever?
Yeah. I thought there must have been, because you suggested this one, I thought you've had a little experience, a little moment in time that's made you think, oh,
like that transparent.
Yeah, no, I just think, well, I thought you always do things for a reason, and there's usually an interesting story behind it. 997 Gen 1 Turbo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think
got looks, it down here.
Looks conspicuously interesting, sort of early mid 40s. Obviously manual, because they only there were Tiptronics.
Tippy of that was actually an automatic tippy as well. Not good.
Gen 2 was Gen 2 PDK 997.
You could get a manual Gen 2, but they're rare as rocking horse.
Yeah, they were. Gen 1 997 Turbo, I think, looks really, really tempting. These are all first world, you know. What I did notice, the other one I noticed, I've kicked myself for not bidding for it, was there was a 1991 Range Rover 3.9 Vogue SE hard dash on Collecting Cars this week. Not lunar miles, for a 32-year-old car, about 90.
What's 100, not 000. Lunar miles, roughly?
90.
Yeah, over 100, well over 100. Mm. So that 30-year-old car. Anyway, £14,000 that went for. It looked, you know, Range Rover classes can be problems because the chassis is rust and the bodywork, blah, 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 the aluminium and steel thing. But bloody hell, 14 grand. You think you could spend, you probably couldn't get a decent Defender, original Defender, or a Land Rover series for that. You can get a whole Range Rover. So I thought,
I can sell you one for that.
I'll see you later.
Those of you watching, can we acknowledge the amazing sky that's emerging behind Edward Lovett? It's really special.
It's very special.
It looks like the set to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. One of the scenes where they've got the sort of skyline of all the higgledy-piggledy roof behind them. Lovely.
I think we agreed that this episode was going to be sponsored by @ Don't Be a Lazy Bastard.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did, didn't we? We're up and about.
Yeah.
Can't bloody breathe this time. Yeah. There we go. Right. Edward, what's...
I need to summarise. I think Neil can go next.
Okay. Right. Neil, you're next.
You're all wrong.
Hang on a minute, I'm summarising, I'll decide that.
Yeah, all right. There's only one, Porsche Boxster, 10 grand.
Yeah,
that's quite...
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, come on, you're all totally wrong. You get a 3.2S.
Unbelievable.
Manual, 65,000 miles. choose your colour because there's a million of them.
Million out there, yeah.
They've all been looked after. They've all had the stuff done. You probably can get a grand knocked off because, you know, it's Christmas. It's the best thing to buy, right?
Yeah.
It's nice Boxster. One. Yeah.
Yeah.
You brought it back beautifully to the people there, Neil. Good, a great recovery. Well done.
I will undo that good work now.
Here we go.
I don't have one. I have a variety. Now, one thing I have said here, and this is a good segue into promoting collecting cars. Firstly, the world has been on pause for the last 2 and a bit years when it comes to depreciation. So I still find it very hard because cars that you would think, and Chris, we've talked recently about like Mulsanne's, for example, but, you know, a Flying Spur is a car that probably should half in value the moment you drive it out of a door, out of the showroom door. But they don't. They seem to still be asking 200,000+ for them. You know, they're only a week old, but I'm sort of looking for those things, thinking they must be 49,950 by now, but they're not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the depreciation has been on pause for the last 2 and a bit years, but we are starting.
Edward, you've got a tiny, tiny speck of lint on your right shoulder. Just keep going, keep going. Can you see it? Thank you.
Is that OCD?
Glasses back.
So yeah, there are cars that I look at, and you know, Renault Alpine would be one of them. 992 Turbo S's are cars that I'm always looking at, thinking, when are they going to be 29,950? But the Renault Alpine has held like a rock.
Yeah.
For the last three years, they just haven't depreciated. But I've got a list here of cars that I think I'd wrote down, and I'm going to come to a finalist, which is not. It's a new car, not even a used car. But 992 Turbo S. That's a car I've mentioned a few times. That's now coming right into the window of what I think is a very good value car. Cayman GT4, GT4s, they aren't good. They aren't particularly good value yet, and they made them in abundance. They're a brilliant car, but that's going to be a car that, in a moment, that's worth buying. The latest gen DBS, which I guess they've stopped making now, that was a car when they launched it. It was very quickly heading towards, you know, good value V12 motoring. And then it just stopped appreciating and it actually went up in value. But they're now coming back to a value that that starts to make sense. The 7-speed last of the Rapid S's. I think actually 8-speed. Were they 8-speed the last one?
8-speed at the end. The bigger horsepower one was 8-speed. Yeah.
Those last cars, you can't fit anyone in the back seats properly. But that's a really good Aston Martin, I think, with the 8-speed automatic gearbox. And that looks like good value today. For the poor sods that bought Zagato, any Vanquish Zagatos brand new, and people that didn't get allocated one and want to buy one at 50% or less than their original value, you can go and buy a shooting brake Aston Martin today for around £300,000, I would think. I think they were £650,000 new.
They're stupid cars.
The Speedsters, I think, were £950,000, and that's probably worth about £450,000 today.
That's right.
So two more to go. The one car that a lot of people say, and I know Chris is going to agree with this, and this is sort of taking it to the people, but the Holy Trinity cars, the McLaren P1 always seems like the car that represents the best value out of those three cars, but there is something that seems to hold the consumer back in really buying them and letting the cars just skyrocket off. And I think it's probably £120,000 worth of battery and warranty and stuff like that, because most people don't hold them very long, do they?
No.
They sort of tell everyone they've got one, and this is, you know, these are half the value they should be. And then 2 weeks later, they've sold it because they're obviously worried about they might have to cover the cost of the battery. Anyway, after all that rant, the final car that I think deserves a mention is a Tesla Model 3.
Fuck off.
And the reason I say that is because in a time where every car is becoming more and more expensive, there's Elon just chipping away at the cost new of a car for the people. It's quite impressive.
What have you done with the real Edward?
Where is he? I was trying to be practical and
where
think
is he? Where's he gone?
The question.
So after 7 minutes, your answer to the question, tell us one car that's a bargain, was that?
Yes. No, all of the above as well, but a Tesla Model 3 with the price keep coming down. I think that probably is quite good value.
Don't pay your workers, relocate to Texas, don't let them unionize, blow up Twitter. Yep, you can produce a cheap.
We waited 7 minutes. Car. You said Tesla, and Neil Clifford told you to Foxtrot Oscar.
Can I just say 1 minute why Edward's completely wrong?
Yes.
You won't need a minute.
They're not making good cars anymore. So all of those cars, GT4s, P1s, they're all going to go up in value. In 10 years' time, they are going to be the icon cars. They're going to be peak ICE cars. So buy them now before they all go back up.
Oh, well, I'm sort of... I think with that was the point.
You're on the same page.
The depreciation's been on pause, but it is now occurring. Yep. But there are some value. There's some value.
We just passed peak car about a month ago.
Yeah.
So those are going to be the cars.
Was that?
Oh, it was October the 5th
or the 6th of November?
October the 1st.
Obviously, one thing I didn't actually use my segue to talk about collecting cars there is go onto an auction website and just bid, because you never know, you might get a bargain.
Yeah,
I thought you were suggesting.
I was just saying the Financial Times yesterday said that because we have pushed back the end of our ICE date, the cost of EVs is actually falling, and the number, not the cost, the number that are being sold is falling. I think the number it was down sort of 20%.
Yeah.
The government changed it.
Yeah, where's the fire?
It's come back 5 years. It's a big deal.
The fire's out of the car.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's going to be Betamax.
Betamax.
Yeah. I like
it. It was always better than VHS.
More than like a Tesla.
Yeah. No, you want Video 2000, the Philips format with two-sided tapes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Video disc, Philips video disc.
That was the one.
Yeah.
Right. I think we've settled that. Rear fog lights, discuss. Chris Cooper... We're limiting you to 11 minutes.
I bloody hate them.
I do too.
Bloody hate them. They're useless. Is there one thing worse than a rear fog light? That's a front fog light. That's even more useless.
They are useless.
Rear fog lights just... I mean, they're so useless. If you said to me, where's the rear fog light button on a car you drive? I couldn't tell you where it is. Because I just don't use it. And I don't use it because when I see other people using it, I mean, there's all the cliches about, you know, well, when we said this one, I said to you on the chat, I said cuddly toy. Nobody got it. Well, you might have got it, but you didn't say anything. Alan Partridge. Rochford, cuddly toy. That little, go on social media. Your fog lights are on.
Yeah.
They're used on. So in the rain, all they do is dazzle. I'm trying to think of how foggy... Yeah, okay, I'm being slightly silly. There is very, very, very thick fog where it will give you or the person behind a little bit of extra warning. But rear lights on cars now are so big and bright, and you know, it's not like we're driving Morris Mini Miners where it's a little bit of a 6-volt sort of battery thing. Rear lights are, you know, and they're bigger and the cars are bigger and higher up and... So no, I hate rear fog. I think they're hateful. And fog lights are even worse. I have never, ever, ever found conditions where front fog lights made a difference. Turn your headlights off.
In a photograph, they look nice.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, my Mark II MR2 had front fog lights, and you could turn them on, and it wouldn't raise the headlights, the pop-up headlights.
Yes.
And that looked cool until until you flash somebody, and then the pop-up headlights would come up, but then they wouldn't go down again. So you had to turn everything off, turn the fog lights off, pretend nobody noticed, turn the fog lights on again, and not flash anybody. I hate rear folder. I couldn't tell you where the switch is because they just don't do anything. I've given up cuddly toy because it's just you'd have to have that on the radio the whole time to tell people your fog lights are on.
Yeah, that's funny. Hey,
Neil Clifford, how do you feel about it?
Well, I agree with Chris. And I think it's a joke the manufacturers have here. How stupid a place can we put the switch for the rear fog lights? And Porsche, where you've got to pull that thing out and then turn it, and then just never know how to put the bloody things on. The irony is, because you always worry about your kids, and it was foggy last weekend, and I was thinking about this. My son Arthur and his girlfriend lives in Luton. It's about an hour away from us. And I'm like, make sure you put the rear... He's like, what are you talking about? He didn't even know there was such a thing as a rear fog light.
Good for Arthur.
Because, yeah, he's like, no, because as we all know, the problem is you put them on, and because the switch is in such a stupid place, you never turn them off. So they stay on for weeks.
Yeah.
So
Edward Lovett, do you have any strong feelings about the rear fog lights?
Well, I've written in my notes here, pre-podcast, I put good when it's foggy.
But then
I struggled to find anything else to write. but I was just thinking about Chris then. Fog lights are not really for us, are they? They're for the other people. So when it is foggy, it's not really for us. I do remember back in those days, especially with the E36 BMWs, that drivers, especially in the Bristol area, did like to have their side lights on and fog lights, because the lights were down here and the side lights were there. They thought that looked quite cool.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I totally agreed. And they actually had to plan that.
The feds would stop you because fog lights, when it wasn't foggy, no signs at all, were illegal. But now they have daylight running lights that do exactly the same thing on the same part of the car, and they're legal. I don't understand that at all.
Yeah.
We do, in the UK in general, we don't particularly have seriously bad weather like some parts in the world. Now, I'm sure you've seen these videos of these amazing crashes. Amazing sounds like a good thing here. It's not. These huge crashes in America, in the Midwest, in a snowy day where they have like 150 car pile up in a snowstorm. Okay. I'm sure they wish someone in front of them had their fog lights turned on before they all started piling into each other.
I had a little trawl about this, and I didn't know that Porsche, because in Germany, you're only allowed to have the fog light, apparently, on the driver's side. So people who are a bit OCD, they think that if you have a left-hand drive car, they think that actually Porsche have forgotten to put a bulb in. They go and spend 20 quid on a bulb, find the socket, then realize it's not wired. I found the most amazing thread about this. And the reason why they only in Germany apparently have it on the left-hand side, because obviously you overtake only on the left-hand side, and that's how you know how to overtake. So the cars only have one fog light, and it's got to be by law on the driver's side.
Love it. German logic.
Oh, lovely. Lovely that.
I think for me, you've touched on one thing, and that is that the idea, how often do you need to use a rear fog light? 3 or 4 times a year, probably.
Max.
If you drive the whole time, maybe more. And if you have to go up to Scotland or whatever, maybe more. But if you don't use them that often and you actually can't find a bloody button when you need to use them, then that really, you know, that is chocolate fire guard territory, isn't it?
Yeah.
The idea that you don't, maybe if actually all of us thought, the first thing I'm going to do is acquaint myself with the controls of my vehicle and I'll memorize where the fog light button is and I can use it properly. But that's not the way people work these days. My problem is that we've got devices in our cars that will tell us what's in the blind spot. They'll park the car for us, but they won't switch off a rear fog light when there's no fog left. So last weekend, I was driving up the M5 and it was really foggy. But 20 miles after that, when it was quite clear and it was actually daylight, every other car had a bloody fog light on. And I just thought to myself, they'll stop only when they turn their cars off will they extinguish that light. There must be a way of a car maker working this out. We've got auto lights on the front. We've got auto everything. You know,
that is a very good point.
I don't understand why they can't sort it out, because it is actually a massive distraction.
Yeah.
And some of them are evil. I followed something Japanese. It had, it might be one of those ones with the funky sort of, it might be a RAV4-y looking thing. It had the tiniest fog light, but it was so piercing, it drew your eyes in. I couldn't bloody ignore it. It was like, as one of my relatives would have said, it was like a whiff of knicker in the airport. You know, you're like, and you're just like, whoa, I couldn't stop looking at it. And I just don't understand the things at all. They're awful. As you say, as Edward says, they're quite good in fog, but they're often used outside of fog.
There's an invention in there. There's an invention there that I think that will make you a millionaire.
Millionaires.
Yeah.
Hurry up. Right. The two car garage this week. The two car garage this week is. Here we go. The cult. This is good news for some people. The cult classic 70s show, The Persuaders, is being. Exclamation mark. Is being made into a feature film. Ryan Reynolds has been cast as Danny Wilde, and Tom Hiddleston, he that can dance, has been cast as Lord Brett Sinclair. The film is set in the modern day, but still in some exotic locations. Sorry, the same exotic locations. What two cars do they have? That's a good one. That's a real... And it's from... It's from Thomas Askew, 1654, which must mean he's fucking old. carry on.
It's just before tea time. Anyway.
Let's go first with Edward Lovett, because he didn't really engage with the fog light thing. I want to give him a chance to broaden his wings. Come on.
I thought I summarized it pretty well. Well, we were debating age. I didn't watch The Persuaders, so I quickly had to Google the what cars did they drive. Now, clearly, although I didn't watch it immediately when I saw the one of, let me show you the photo I shared. Hold on 2 seconds, caller.
The one outside Nice Airport.
Let me just turn my phone like that. There we go. Yeah.
Look at that one.
Which I didn't need to do too much research. So clearly the replacement to those is a brand new Aston Martin DBS 770 Ultimate Edition and a 246 GTB, 249. 246962B. Anyway,
in the car business, Edward.
One of those.
So
296 GTB, or maybe a GTS in a nice dark shade of blue with a brown leather. I'm not sure.
That would be lovely. I particularly like that.
Anyhow, there's a gag in there about Ferrari franchises somewhere. Edward.
No stickers. No stickers.
I think good choices. Neil Clifford.
Oh, yeah, I think Ed was pretty much right, really. 296. I was going to go 458 just because I think it's actually just a slightly prettier car. So I'm going to go 458. 458 Spider, posi, tan, silver wheels, no shields. And then I'd go DB12. I'm not trying to be clever. I'm just trying to be right here. I think that's sort of what you do. DB12 and 458 Spider.
I love it. Whenever Neil Clifford, but I've noticed a lovely tick from Neil that whenever he wants to rattle off a spec of a car, particularly a Ferrari, he gives it a head nod like he's heading a football. He'll go, Posi, bit of brown, silver wheels. It's like he nudges it into the back of the net. Like, lovely little tick that.
On the end, Gary. Sick as a parrot.
Chris Cooper, what are you going to head into the next of the two-car garage?
I think they'd both have two-car garages. They'd have a relaxing at the beach club car in the garage, and they'd have something for formal wear, I think. They both have that. So I think Danny Wilde, I think he'd have a 458 Spider. I do think he'd have that. But I also think for sort of something slightly different for a different kind of occasion, I think he'd have a Maserati Bora.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
I think you'd have a Maserati Bora. Just because, you know, it's Ryan Reynolds, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think he's flexible enough, got just enough breadth when he's not playing football for Wrexham. Maserati Bora. Brett Sinclair, I think, is a bit more interesting. So I think he'd have an Aston, but the sort of the DB12, the sort of that, you know, when Roger Moore did that, I mean, it's hard to believe now, that was filmed as a TV show in pokey little Britain when he was James Bond driving that DBS thing, which was originally meant to be a DBS V8 and it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a six-cylinder because it hadn't quite finished colouring in the design of the V8 on that beautiful goldy colour thing. So I think he'd have sort of a late model, sort of 2017 Aston V8, the most recently V8, the V8 Vantage S. Manual. It's not a very good manual, but manual rather than the robotic one. The one of 577 horsepower, one of those. And I think for more formal occasions, or when he was with the ladies, I think he'd have to have the coolest English convertible there is for meeting a guest at Nice Airport. He'd have a Bentley Azure T.
Correct. Like, ooh.
Manish.
I was very into the show. I remember watching it literally as a six-year-old. not obviously on its first run. A note to this show, Lou Grade, who commissioned it, you know, one of our great TV legends, was trying to break into the American market. And so what they wanted to do was the last episode of The Saint had the guy from The Champions in, the American guy.
Yeah.
And apparently the chemistry was amazing between them. And that inspired this show. Why don't we get an American sleuth and a British sleuth?
Stick
them in Britain, send them to Italy, send them to Spain and France, and we'll get them doing kind of, you know, sort of little Euro missions. And it's bound to work in America. So they actually commissioned 24 of these, and they were shot within a year. There were a couple of small issues with it. And the biggest issue was Tony Curtis was high on pot for the entire year. He was just off his face, apparently. He'd turn up to rehearsals, be really obnoxious, and just not know his lines. And let's just say that Roger Moore's a bit more even-tempered and managed to get him through this. The other little spin in this, that Roger Moore got paid £1 million for this series between 1970 and 1971.
What's that adjusted for inflation?
I mean, that's 25 million quid or 20 million quid. I mean, it's an insane amount of money for television.
Yeah.
He became outside America the biggest, you know, kind of TV star. In fact, I think the next guy who actually finally put that to bed was Peter Falk in Columbo.
Yeah.
He was paid $300,000 an episode.
Wow. I love him.
Insane amount of money. So I think, you know, and the whole point of the show is that, I mean, the show, by the way, is terrible. The plots, you could write them on the back of a cigarette packet. The sets were made of cardboard. They have this huge punch-up in the very first one. In the bar. I've got the walls up. But it's a set of Crossroads. It's so bad. I mean, it is so bad. They spent all the money, basically, on Moore's salary. And Roger Moore designed his own clothes. So when you get to the episode designed by Roger Moore, every single jacket's got an epaulette. It's just, I mean, everything about this is terrible. But I have to say, there was something about the cars that absolutely bit you. And I had a little think about this. And I think you're probably right. If Danny Wilde had that 246 GT, and if you were going to purely update that, I guess it would be the 296. But I actually think, I looked at the 246. Did you know it's 4.2 meters long? It's 1.7 meters wide, and it weighs just over a ton. And I thought the Ferrari that got closest to that was actually the 288 GTO.
Wow.
It's 4.2 meters long. It's 1.8 meters wide and it weighs just over a ton. And it would look fantastic. You just park that thing in red with its black.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
That's a good
Danny
call,
Wilde's
yeah.
car. That's Danny Wilde's car. And Brett Sinclair, whose full name I found out yesterday, is Lord Brett, Rupert, George, Robert, Andrew, Sinclair. I think...
He's not a real person, though, is he?
Oh, he is to me. He is to me. He is to me. So I think he'd have a Continental GT Mulliner, a WTEP 12, sapphire blue, cambric interior. He would just look fantastic getting out of that, Tom Hiddleston. And, you know, if they could come up with a decent plot, I'd watch it. And just one final tiny detail. The reason why the show stopped was because he got James Bond.
That's right. Yeah,
same so yeah. He got the Man with the Golden Gun, and that was the end of it. You know, spent all this money, no sequels.
Nice.
Well covered there. I like that. Now, my theory here is that when they remake these shows, even if they just about do justice to original format, they always sod the cars up completely. They never get it right. They never consult anyone like us. They should do. We should be the car consultants to films because we know about these things. And these
could be millionaires.
So we have to assume they've totally balls this up. So you've got Hiddleston, you've got Ryan Reynolds. They arrive at Nice Airport to recreate that scene. And the Brit has to get into a Valkyrie because they've gone, right, it's got to be the latest Aston. It was an Aston Martin, let's get the latest one. And you see him trying to get into this fucking thing and then he can't start it and then it needs to go back because there's a gearbox fault or something. So it's
Moneypenny. I think I've curbed the wheel.
It's a Valkyrie. So he's there trying to get into it and it's too hot and he's sweating and he's got some burden next to him. He's gone, put your peltors on. I'm trying to tell you I want to shag you.
But it's channel two on the peltor.
All I can hear is the oil pump. So he does that. And then the Ferrari, well, it has to be the last really stupid. It has to be a LaFerrari, doesn't it? So he gets into a LaFerrari. He pulls away and he doesn't really get what he's doing. And then he gets a warranty claim because the battery's gone wrong because he hasn't charged it properly. So they get to the outskirts of the airport and it's bollocks. It's completely bollocks. They've run out of money and they don't film another episode.
No, you shoot it in Dubai just for the complete.
But it is the case, and we're offering our services here. If you want to remake a classic format, the cars are always wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to some music because two of our gallant podcasters need to go for breakfast. So let's start with some music. Neil Clifford.
There's only one this week. Fairy Tale of New York.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shame.
There you go.
Yeah. Christmas number one. Come on, go and buy it.
Yeah.
Is it still banned on the BBC or not?
No. It's slightly unbanned. On Radio 2, they play it unmuted on the word.
Yeah.
But on Radio 1, because they're fragile little flowers, it's still muted, I think. Somebody will correct us.
Ed would love it.
This is a really random one, but I quite like it. And I played it about 26 times on the way back from my parents' home the other day with my kids in the car. So they now know the words off by heart. But it's Marina and the Diamonds, Obsessions.
Okay. Oh, nice song.
Yeah, make a note of that.
I know it.
Is it a new song?
No, it's an old song.
No.
When I say old for me, but might be a... 3 or 4 years or 6 or 7 years or something like that.
Manish.
The best thing about the Persuaders is the theme tune. So I'm going with John Barry's theme tune for the Persuaders.
They're all good, weren't they? Utter genius.
Never say we don't give you lovely little links in this podcast. Everything links together. It's all thought about. It's all thought about. Chris Cooper.
So thinking about other TV series with great music and Miami Vice and the cars and music were great. The Blue Nile.
Yes.
Pat's album.
Yes.
Which I used to play to death on my little tape player on my Renault 5 GT Turbo.
Yeah.
Loved it. Yeah. The Downtown Lights. There's something about the long version, the 6.5 minute version of that, that, you know, it's Christmas, and the other one I had was Fairy Tale New York, because I think everyone's got to want to play that. And after what happened last week, and crikey, 22, 23 years since Kirsty MacColl died.
Yeah.
Downtown Lights from the Hats album, The Blue Nile, in the car, driving through a city at Christmas. Wonderful.
And how well produced is that album? If you've got a hi-fi and you want to test out how good your hi-fi is.
It took them a long time to do that one. Album.
They weren't quick workers, were they? No. I'm going to go for Talk, Talk, It's My Life.
Oh,
oh nice.
I think that's a really good 80s pop song.
It is good, that.
So I think we're all in agreement that we've chosen some decent music. Edward Lovett has discovered a love and fascination for the Rear Foglight. Manish Pandey likes John Barry's theme tunes, so do all of us. Neil Clifford started this podcast in the dark, holding a tin of Devon in a Bentley, when it's now daylight, and those walking past him must think he really is out there, and Chris Cooper's off doing honest day's work.
That is Ambrosia, Derry.
It is. I am.
Of course it is.
It is. Always carry some.
Devon Custard.
Always carry custard with you.
I'm Chris Harris. I've only just been able to breathe the last 10 minutes of this. We're not recording this early in the morning ever again. No. Thank you very much for listening.